getting better.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We're trying to figure out what happened at Hart Canyon, Aztec, New Mexico. The book is called The Aztec Incident, Recovery at Hart Canyon. We have Scott and Suzanne Ramsey. Suzanne is telling us about the cement slab that was left there. Okay, a cement slab, and those of us who know nothing about building anything, I can build radio kits. I know nothing about building houses or factories or industrial kind of production. Tell me, because I know nothing about this process, what would you use this cement slab for?
Let me step back just a second and give you a little more information. You asked me, the question was initially, what would you see when we went to initially start to investigate the crash site? There were some trees that were down. There was a space that had been cleared, and there is a cement slab that's adjacent to it. And Scott, just before the two of us got together, Scott interviewed a gentleman that he was able to track through some fascinating research. I mean, I don't know how he picked this out, but he was able to locate a gentleman that was a procurement officer that would procure items that you would need on location when, you know, disasters and things came up. He was the person that would ship out and make sure that you got everything that you needed. And Scott was able to locate him. He's on the East Coast, and went and visited with him, now at this point an elderly man, and said, "Can you help me with what happened? I see that you got all the good reports, and you had access to all this information." And the gentleman was cautious at first, but did share some things. And one of the things that he said is that he actually saw pictures of the craft. He never was able to go to the craft, but he sent out information and equipment for what they would need. And one of the things that he said, "You will know that you found the right spot when you find a cement slab." And Scott's statement was, "In the middle of the desert?" And he said, "Yes, that's where you'll know that it's so strange. There's nothing else around. You'll see a little road that's not going to be on any of the maps or anything, and then you'll see the cement slab." And he described that because of the silty ground, in order to move the craft, they had to bring in a crane.
Okay, so this guy saw a picture of the crash UFO, but there are no pictures that anyone can find.
No, okay. We have never.
Okay.
But what he said is that because of the silty ground with the crane, when they would try to lift up something of this size, you know, keep in mind, you know, 100 foot, that it kept sliding. So what they had to do was lay a cement slab for the crane to balance itself on so that they could lift it, you know, solid ground, in other words. They had to create an artificial solid ground. And they had to build a road to get to it. So these were definitive things. That's what caused Scott and Randy Barnes to go looking for this cement slab. And at the area that seemed to be where the crash had happened, there was no cement slab. So they started poking with rods to try and locate this. And so I'm just trying to kind of walk you through the steps of what, you know, how we knew to look for that. So that is something. And then since then, not only have we had analysis done, but we also have brought in people from the area that would be experts in the field to say, is there any reason that a cement slab would be here? And they said, absolutely not.
So it would have to be strictly for helping to move a very, very heavy object.
Heavy object, exactly.
Okay, we can't even begin to imagine what this thing weighed, 100 feet in diameter. We have no idea. It could be light as a feather because of the construction of the metallic material. We have no idea. But the question is here, 100 feet, can you carry this thing in one piece? What would you do? Put it on some kind of wheels or what?
No, that's a very good question. And it's funny, we actually had gotten to the point that we thought, you know, we'll probably have the book winding up. And one day Scott came to me and he said, you know, there's an area we haven't uncovered. And I said, what's that? And I have to keep in mind, hundreds of thousands of dollars. We've traveled all over the country and have spoken about this topic we'll be married in October 9 years. And so since we've been together, we have spoken about this and worked on this project every single day, all but 2 days of our honeymoon. So this is like a big part of our life. But he came to me and he said, we're getting close, but he said, we need to figure out how they got it out of there. And we need to see if it's even feasible. Because he said, you know, skeptics are going to be honest about it. And he said, and most of all, I want to know. I need to know that. And I said, holy cats, do you know what that's going to cost us? But we did it. And we hired one of the, an expert, he's world renowned, on moving heavy objects and large objects. And so, and by different means, different types of transportation. And he, you know, was, what we also wanted to do, and we've done with all of our experts, is try to get people that don't give a hoot about UFOs. They're not, oh, we want to make this happen. Because that's not how we are. If it's a legitimate case, then it's a legitimate case. If it's not, then it's not. That's all there is to it. And so
you're not expecting riches from this, because there's no way, if you sell 1,100 copies of this book and the list price of the book is $24.95, you sell that, you're talking about $24,950, and you spent what, $500,000 on this?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, so you know, the key for us was unlocking that knowledge as opposed to anything else. Honestly, you know, it's we're not going to try and convince you of anything. But so we called in this gentleman, Bill Metzger, and discussed it with him and said, you know, we need to know if this object, didn't tell him what it was. And he was, you know, okay, all right, I'll fly out there. I'll get out there to New Mexico and we'll actually reenact it, and I'll see if it's feasible with the roads and with the equipment that they had at that time to move things like that.
And because of the sparse population, people just wouldn't notice.
Well, the thing is, if you went about it and you just based it on today's roads, people would see it. But if you went with the roads that existed at that time, and that's where, as both of you know, being researchers, you have to dig deeper. It's not just something, well, let's just pull this up on the internet. You really have to go into archives and spend time trying to know, is this accurate information? And everyone kept saying, oh, well, you couldn't do it today. You couldn't do it today. Well, of course. But with the roads, of course, they were unimproved roads. They weren't paved or anything back in that day. But they were back roads. And that's all that really existed.
And you have to be lucky that maybe a farmer didn't come rushing by to see what was going on. And maybe if they did, they'd be asked to be quiet about it.
Well, and you would never know. You know, there's no way we'll ever know that. There's just no way. But in Scully's book, he describes that it was taken apart in three sections and then moved.
Okay, that's the one thing I have a problem about. Okay, we're talking about a relatively intact, perfectly formed craft of unknown weight. How the heck do you disassemble it?
You know, the picture that I have, and this may not be the most accurate, but I think of it fit together like a piece of puzzle, pieces of puzzle. So they were, and again, this is my picture in my mind, but like tongue and groove.
So maybe the original designers, who were whatever they may have been, built it in sections and you had to find a way to take it apart. But using 1948 technology was something that may have been built with technology that's hundreds of years ahead of us. That's where I have problems.
Exactly.
That's why I'm hoping you'll explain this to me.
Well, and so what we ended up doing was them taking it apart and then moving it out.
But we're assuming it's being taken apart, but once again, did anyone tell you how do you take this thing apart? I think that's where we have to kind of go before we go. Once you take it apart, I guess you can do anything.
Blowtorch.
But you think a welding torch would do it?
How it was moved. I mean, how it was actually taken apart. Pins and grooves, or tongue and grooves, more is what you would describe. That's why I just asked Scott if he had a better way to describe it. But that's why in my mind I picture it as like a puzzle. You know, pieces that slid out from each other. You know, I can't explain it.
We're assuming here they found a way to disassemble this thing and to transport, because otherwise they couldn't have done it, or would have had to find a way to take it intact. We have Scott and Suzanne Ramsey with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got like, I guess, 60 or so different items. And entails t-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of t-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great t-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. If you go to store.theparacast.com, stop by and take a shopping tour.
Don't answer it! How can I stop these annoying collection calls?
Imagine being free from your debt without settling and with no payment plan, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days and keep all your money? You can. It's called Zero Debt Guarantee, and it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now, 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info. Or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. That's 800-477-9256. Or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com.
For a long time, you've heard me talk about building your own food supply with eFoods Direct. As a listener, you know why you need to have a supply of the best storable food on the planet. Every day, we document the attempts to take control of our lives. But there's one thing we can all control, your greatest dependency, food. eFoods Direct products are made with only the best ingredients and none of the trash and contaminants like trans fats, GMOs, or MSG. This food is nutrient-dense and tastes great. It's simple to make, portable, and has a shelf life of up to 25 years. Now with eFoods Direct, you'll get the most affordable, best-tasting food you can buy. And the new products and pricing will blow you away. Compared to other food sources, including home-cooked meals, you can cut your food cost in half. You just can't afford to ignore this. Call 800-409-5633. Or go to eFoodsDirect.com/Alex for specials. Don't let this offer pass you by. Call 800-409-5633 or eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. More the best for less guaranteed.
How much are you spending on your protein? Did you know that at normal cooking temperatures, you lose 50% or more of the amino acids that make up your protein? This means you're throwing away 50% of your money when eating cooked proteins, and you're burdening your organs of elimination. Proteins are vital to your health. But to get the full benefit, they must come into your bloodstream as undamaged amino acids. One World Whey is processed in a unique manner to protect the amino acids so they're easy to digest and use at the cellular level. The health benefits of undamaged whey protein are well documented. They are healing, reduced inflammation, increased levels of glutathione, detoxification, weight loss, muscle gains, more energy, and a better sense of well-being. If you want to have the energy to achieve your dreams, consider adding One World Whey to your diet. Call 888-988-3325. Mention coupon code KNOCKOUT and you'll receive a free tube of Knockout Pain Cream with your order, which eliminates soft tissue pain in 10 minutes for 90% of users. Call 888-988-3325 or visit oneworldway.com. That's oneworld, W-H-E-Y.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So we're trying to figure out how they may have taken apart a 100-foot flying saucer using 1948 technology. Our guests this week on the Paracast are Scott and Suzanne Ramsey, authors of The Aztec Incident, Recovery at Heart Canyon. If you go to theaztecincident.com, you can check out and order a copy of the book for yourself. So, Suzanne, I guess you have to consider the difficulties in understanding how they may have taken this craft apart in pieces like a puzzle. So, would they have used welding equipment?
No, they didn't. No, they didn't. It actually, now keep in mind, that, and in another chapter that we cover the, and if you're familiar with the story, you'll know this name, and if you're not, then this will be something that you'll learn in the book, is that Scully had talked about 9 scientists that were brought in from all over, and they were the top scientists in their fields, and continued on in life after this to accomplish tremendous things. And we were able to identify them. And when you look at what their gifts and talents are and what they've done, you see that it wouldn't be like, and I'll speak for myself, I won't speak for you two gentlemen, but it wouldn't be like me going up to this craft and saying, well, maybe I'll just cut this.
So you had the name of the 9 scientists in the book. And the question would be then, did you try to make an effort to contact these scientists and see what they had to say? Or if they weren't around, contact their heirs and see what information you could get from them.
We followed in and did research in archives. We followed in to their histories, their backgrounds, their travel records, to in depth as you possibly can. Most of them, in fact, all of them, one of them was still alive, and we had not isolated him, and he just died. We actually were on a plane and flying cross-country and found his obituary, and we felt like he was the one, and then were able to identify him. So no, his family members, they just don't really exist. These gentlemen were under such classified, worked on such classified projects that, they wouldn't have been able to discuss this with their family members anyway.
So we have here 9 scientists who are working together or separately to use cutting-edge technology in order to disassemble a 100-foot flying saucer. Where would you take them? How would you take them? Would you try to put them on a railroad train? I guess there's no railroads near there. Would you try to lift them on an airplane and take it to the final destination? Where would you go?
If you're the way that and based on information that we gathered, and then actually physically went out and measured and reenacted over bridges, over hill and dale, frankly, how to get that craft out. And that's what I'm saying. That's what was so costly, to reenact this. And we, to get it to a location, to move it by plane, there's just no way they could probably do that back in those days. But to get it to Los Alamos, keep in mind, Los Alamos is, in eastern part of New Mexico, northeastern part of New Mexico. And that would be a perfectly reasonable place to go, and probably where they took it.
So we have Los Alamos as a possible destination here. So did you consider here that now we have a lot more potential witnesses to the arrival of this strange craft? Did you make any effort to try to reach out to find out if there's anyone out there who'd have any memory of such a thing? Or would we assume that because of the people who were at the landing site admonished to be secret about it, the same situation on steroids would apply at Los Alamos?
Gene, honestly, if you go to Los Alamos and if you spend some time there, one building and even one desk away does not have any idea what the next desk is working on. They're a customer of Scott's. And so we know this from the inside, and it is so carefully, it's secure. I don't know how else to explain it. And so there would be no reason that these folks would discuss this.
So they might have brought this stuff into a hangar, closed the doors, told the few people who were taking apart this craft what was going on. This happened in 1948. So the assumption being, if there was a craft there, we've got the cement slab, and there's no craft now, well, therefore, somehow, they moved it from here to there, and Los Alamos being, I'm trying to follow the logic here, Los Alamos being the nearest installation that would have the capability of looking at what they got, well, that was the place
Kirtland
they went to.
Kirtland Air Force Base
sure.
was there, too.
Sure, Kirtland Air Force Base. Could they have taken it there? Would there be a...
Those would be two very
sure.
reasonable, very close facilities that would have... the ability to not only conceal it, but start to do whatever they needed to it. And the scientists came in through by way of Durango. They flew into Durango, Colorado, which is just a few miles away from Aztec. And that's what it looks like. That's the tracking that we were able to do.
So by tracking this, we're seeing here the potential that this was taken to Kirtland or to Los Alamos years ago and probably still there unless it's been moved.
I can't say that. I wish I could tell you, but I can't tell you. I don't know. But I will say one thing that I wanted to mention back when we were talking about the witness that Scott interviewed on the East Coast about the procurement officer. One of the things that was really interesting was that his statement was one of his jobs was to make sure in the records of all of the people that were involved, and there were about 200 over a couple week period on the crash site, 200 military people. And his job was to, and I believe the quote was, put them in places so they could never be tracked to this. Like, if you were out playing softball and you twisted your ankle and you were in the infirmary. So one of his jobs was to make sure that the records never indicated that this person was out in New Mexico at that
Create time. Cover stories.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So therefore, there's no way to find out which soldiers were there because everything would be hidden, everything would be classified, everything would be covered up. And so far, other than the witnesses you've unearthed, any other whistleblowers that you find who have any knowledge about what might have happened?
There was a minister that was traveling by. He was, a traveling minister. He took care of several churches in the area. And again, you know, what might be 10 miles or 20 miles to us to... There was a minister on site. He actually, I guess you could say, was passing by and passed where this happened. And he saw activity happening back and forth and, different vehicles pulling in and out and just activity that was unusual. He was a circuit teacher or a minister. And so he was leaving from Aztec and heading back home to Mancos, Colorado. And on his way, he passed by this and thought, I hope everything's okay. I'll go and check. So he drove off the road to the crash site. And when he got there, they were removing the bodies. And he went to see if he could help. And initially, from the distance, not knowing, was this were these human beings or whatever, and got over there. And, of course, they were all dead. And he gave them, prayers, said kind of rest in peace, and did some prayers.
We'll get into more of this with Scott and Suzanne Ramsey with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Will I have garlic breath after I take Ali-C?
We get that question all the time about the world's best garlic extract, Ali-C. And the answer is, Ali-C contains stabilized allicin, nature's antimicrobial agent, and the active ingredient in crushed garlic, but will not give you garlic breath. Scientifically proven in double-blind studies, using low doses of allicin greatly reduces the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Our powerful Ali-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin. Just one tablet of Ali-C is equivalent to 40 garlic cloves. It's effective against asthma, MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections, and helps lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Plus, it's a natural mosquito repellent. Boost resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Ali-C. For more information and to order Ali-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 877-888-7126 or garlichealthproducts.com. Fight back with Ali C.
Are you still a traditional smoker? Now experience a new lifestyle and try vaping with e-cigarettes by LeCig. Imagine no ashes, stains, nasty smell, or coughing and hacking. With LeCig e-cigarettes' revolutionary microelectronic technology, rechargeable battery, and unique replaceable cartridge, you'll get all the benefits and satisfaction of smoking without the hazards. Choose your taste from a wide variety of our new American-made Vaporeon e-liquids at LeCig.com. And LeCig smokes the competition by serving thousands of worldwide customers with real people customer service, fast, free, same-day shipping, and a 30-day warranty and satisfaction guarantee. So are you ready for a new vaping lifestyle? Then call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Or visit LeCig.com, spelled LeCig.com. LeCig e-cigarettes for today's modern smoker.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
Hello, this is Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So maybe the djinn have the answer, Chris, to what happened over at Aztec?
It seems awful. There's a lot of sleight of hand and tricksterishness going on by the government if this case is effectively covered up as it was. And I know the area down there around Aztec, and it's very difficult to pull off moving large objects like that. Obviously, they've had a lot of practice in the intervening years with all the oil rigs and the drilling that goes on in the whole gas fields from there to Dulce, pretty much. So, and you know, all the way to Montrose, for that matter. But I'm really intrigued by this. Now, you're saying, Suzanne, that an actual minister was allowed to get near the crash site and give like last rites or something to these, or to pray over these bodies. That sounds a little strange. You would think that they would have a very secure perimeter around the crash site, and he would never have been able to get close. That's a pretty interesting claim.
Well, and what ended up happening was he got back to Mancos, Colorado, and he was a Baptist minister, and it was a small church, and he called together several of I guess you could say his closest parishioners and people that meant a lot to him, and he sat and just cried, and he said, "I have something to tell you," and it shook me up a lot, and he shared what he saw, and that was something that, you know, that's one of the things you're not going to see anyplace else, because that was, we felt honored in the fact that got in touch with some of the family members and different people that were parishioners of his church and shared that information and just how much it impacted his life and how much it shook him up.
But he also kept it quiet.
He did. We got this information from some of the parishioners. In fact, it was on one of our researches, or one of our times out there researching, and we were digging around in Mancos and for some information, and you know, someone contacted us and said, you know, we need to share this with you. And it's amazing, you know, people that were, you know, persuaded by the government not to share the information and were fearful, how when they get towards the end of their life, they just feel like they have to share it. They've carried that burden all these years, and they feel like they have to share it.
But a lot of what you have here, most or all of what you have here, is basically someone's verbal description. What about printed documents, affidavits, anything else, drawings, anything that you were able to uncover during your research?
Oh, my gosh. We have 55,000. You ought to see our house is not the average house, let me tell you. I am going to let Scott go into some specifics with that for you.
Okay, so yeah, let's have Scott Ramsey now explain the physical documentation, 55,000 pieces of documentation, so that we go past just the remembrances and go into more of the evidence. Scott, tell us briefly, because we only have a segment and a half left for the show, the physical documents that help you point to the picture of what happened here.
Well, as we published and put in the book, there's a lot of documents from both Air Force, the Air Force OSI, the FBI. There was a sting operation that took place in Denver, Colorado, 1952, I believe, at the Edelweiss Bar, where they were trying to interrupt the sale of pictures from an individual to a Mr. Klein with the Baltimore Sun paper, newspaper.
This was information about Aztec.
Yes, specifically in the report. Black and white photographs of a flying saucer from Aztec, recovered near Aztec, New Mexico. Those documents are in the book. At the end, the Air Force, Army, and FBI question, because the gentleman opposing to sell the photographs, when they approach him, he didn't have any photographs on him. And he said he had just been kidding the reporter all along and he had no photographs and that he had been drunk. The problem is, do you really think the Baltimore Sun-Times would send a man all the way from Baltimore to Denver to pay $1,500, which was a lot of money back then, for black and white photos of a UFO, flying saucer? We researched, with the help of Joe Burris, one of the lead investigative reporters with the Baltimore Sun-Times, to find out there was no Klein, regardless of how you spell it, C-L-I-N-E or K-L-I-N-E, whatever, that worked for the Baltimore Sun-Times at that time. So now the question is, this gentleman appearing to be the reporter that was trying to buy the photos, who was he? And what kind of credentials did he show the FBI, Army Counterintelligence Division, and Air Force OSI that they let him walk right out of the bar back onto the street? So
that's
very
an interesting little twist.
Yeah, it is. And when I contacted the Baltimore Sun, they said, well, you need to be talking with Joe Burris because he's our investigative reporter. And, yeah, we went through personnel records and the whole bit. And there was one Klein throughout the years at work there, but he wrote about arts and entertainment, and it wasn't even – he was there in the 70s, wasn't even there in the 50s. So that plot really thickens because not only – oh, and in the report, the military says the man claimed he was drunk and did not have any photographs. I'm ad-libbing this. However, we do not believe him. In other words, they did not believe that he was just drunk. It looks like they thought that he was, in fact, trying to sell photographs of the flying saucer that landed or crashed near Aztec, New Mexico. Gene, there's a lot on this. You know, the book's only 224 pages with pictures and documents. When we set the book up to write it, we tried not to bore the reader to death. But really, in reality, it could have been a book 400, 500, 600 pages. It all depends on how much you want to bore people to nauseam with documents. A lot of people, that's all they would buy the book for, to look at the supportive documents. And other people just want to read about a historical event that happened. So
Okay, but beyond the photograph that may or may not have existed, what other key documents are you including in the book or at least have available?
A lot of great correspondence between Frank Scully and Silas Newton, back and forth, correspondence between Frank Scully and Paul Smith, the editor of the San Francisco newspaper, back and forth with Scully and other people concerning the incident. We found out back in 2010 that all of Frank Scully's files are located at the University of Wyoming in Laramie. so a dear friend of mine, Mike Price, and I went out for 7 days and went through as many documents as we could. We did not get to read them all. There's 33,000 documents. And it's his entire life, political career, books he wrote, but there's a huge amount on behind the flying saucers.
So this was serious research. It's not just somebody throwing a book together because he wanted to make a few dollars off UFOs.
You're not ever going to make a few dollars writing, publishing a book on UFOs. That's never going to happen.
What other kind of evidence did you find amongst Scully's papers?
At Laramie, just great correspondence we put in the book. You know, Frank Scully, you know, he said several times if he was duped, you know, he'd write the story on how he was duped on his own. When he took this to his death, two things. Who did the real Dr. G's were? He would never divulge, even to his family.
A Dr. G was a composite. It wasn't one person. And we have to give an example of this, which is, it's not unusual for people who write factual books to make composite characters. Even Obama did that in his autobiographies. Some of the characters are composites because, I guess, the space involved. So maybe how many people would he be talking about here in a composite character?
8 to 9.
Okay.
So he creates in the book Dr. G, where he says Dr. G is a composite of 8 to 9 scientists.
These are 9 scientists being the ones that are being referred to earlier. You'll answer that question in a moment. We have Scott and Suzanne Ramsey. You're on with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to DreamHost.com/radio, DreamHost.com/radio. Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com.
Love gardening but don't love seeing your hard work destroyed by wildlife? Then use the number one most effective deer and rabbit repellent you can buy, PlantSkid. PlantSkid repellent protects gardens, trees, and landscaping by emitting an odor that browsing animals associate with predators. So animals avoid plants before they nibble, not after. PlantSkid is made in the U.S. from non-toxic, 100% organic, environment, and pet-friendly ingredients. Other repellents wash off in the rain. Not PlantSkid. It's guaranteed to outlast all other repellents. PlantSkid was the first animal repellent to be OMRI listed organic and now comes in liquid spray, powder concentrate, or easy-to-use granular. Just sprinkle around your garden. For proven protection from deer, rabbits, squirrels, and other small rodents, use PlantSkid. Member tested and recommended by the National Home Gardening Club. Find a dealer near you at PlantSkid.com. That's PlantSkyd.com. Ask about our new vole repellent when you call 800-252-6051. That's 800-252-6051. PlantSkid, proven plant protection, guaranteed or your money back.
And now another CentOS Game Changer with sports broadcaster Aaron Andrews.
I'm down in the main ballroom of a 4-star hotel in Austin with Tom, the GM. Tom, you've had 4 wedding receptions in 3 days. That's a brutal schedule.
Yeah, we've been hustling.
Well, your team still looks fresh, and I gotta say, the carpet does too. Talk about your game plan.
Simple. We called in the all-star team from CentOS, and they changed our ground game completely.
CentOS? They're known for uniforms. How do they tackle your floors?
Their tile and carpet deep cleaning service makes our flooring look like new. With our old playbook, we used to rip out the carpet. So we're running with CentOS from now on.
Thanks, Tom. And thanks to CentOS, there's plenty of life left in this dance floor. Let's go up to the booth.
Tile and carpet cleaning is one of the many expert services the Cintas team can tackle for your business. Don't replace your tile or carpets. Call 1-800-CINTAS6 or visit Cintas.com/radio and tell them to bring in the team with the white truck.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy free, contains all natural and certified organic ingredients, contains no preservatives or animal products, supports a healthy digestive and immune system, supports weight loss, improves absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses three groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraganiX.com, Terraganics.com, or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM-1, the raw probiotic.
Hi, this is nuclear physicist lecturer Stanton Friedman. You are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
And by the way, Stanton Friedman wrote the introduction to the book, written by Scott and Suzanne Ramsey, The Aztec Incident Recovery at Hart Canyon. And we were discussing the research that was done by the late Frank Scully into this. Now, how many documents does he actually have on this particular book? Did you get a sense? Is it tens of thousands of documents? Hundreds? What?
Well, there's 33,000 documents in Frank Scully's collection. I could give you a pretty close count of what entails just the book behind the flying saucers. Mike Price and I copied over 800 of the 863 documents we brought back. That doesn't include photographs that we had scanned on disk, but actual hard letters, correspondence back and forth. And, Scully did a lot of incredible things throughout his career. I've got a lot of his books that he had written. Some were big hits, some were not so great. He was a very popular guy, very, very famous guy. But the fact that he would not divulge, even leading up to his death, who Dr. G was, because he was sworn to secrecy. He said he could cause these guys great harm. And
we're talking about Dr. G being V9 scientists who were consulted about moving the object.
Right.
Okay.
We did a lot of work all the way up till August of 2011. We went up to the University of Minnesota to go through their archives. Wonderful archive, by the way. And some of the scientists we had an interest in, and this part of the book, as I state to the reader, is speculation. This speculation on our part, after hearing throughout the book that Frank Scully wrote behind the flying saucers, he leaves hints as to their background. And I'll give you one quick example in the interest of time. He says that these men were men of science. Well, what does that mean? Well, it turns out every year there's an award for the man of science. And ironically, Dr. Jonathan Torrance Tate had received it in the years around Scully's statement about that. So we started looking at Tate's biography and resume, and it started to fit the character in Scully's book. Worked for the OSRD under Dr. Vannevar Bush. That type of thing. Dr. Otto Schmidt, also alumni from University of Minnesota from the teaching side. And there's just an incredible composite of people that would have worked on the projects during World War II, as Scully described in the book.
So you can infer from what Scully wrote that these may have been the nine scientists who were consulted about this.
Right. And if we're wrong, we're not off by many. If as long as Scully's description are accurate, we should be right there.
So I get the impression of incredible seriousness and diligence in this research. It's not just something that you threw together. Once again, and you guys have been spending all these years putting these documents together, trying to figure out what happened, and now we're in speculative Rome because we don't have much time and we have to figure out where to go. So having done all this research, spent all this time, and I gather maybe you'll go somewhere else in doing your future research into a different project, but where can we take the Aztec case from here? There aren't going to be any witnesses to be found unless they live to be over 100. So where do we find a smoking gun, or can we ever find a smoking gun?
That's good. That's the $64 question, I guess. I firmly believe in the Four Corners area there is at least one or two people still alive. A lot of speculation behind what I just said, but I firmly believe there are. We were contacted by a gentleman, 93 years old, as we were literally waiting on the shipment of the books, and he asked if I would send him a copy. He wanted to read the book to see how accurate our research was. That's a pretty powerful statement.
This particular person, do you know his background? What was he?
Army career.
Okay.
And I asked him, were you close to this case? And he said, I'll read your book, and I'll write you a letter, and I'll grade it on how accurate it was, where you fell short, and then we'll talk. And he said, at my age, I'd love to talk about it.
It's not as if they could stop him.
Well, I don't think he really cares at 93 what they're going to do.
Just be lucky?
And it could be an elderly man that's just off on having a wonderful day with his imagination. I don't know. But he took the time to write a really nice letter.
Well, that also raises the question the skeptics are going to bring up, and we might as well touch that now. How do we know that with all this evidence you presented, remembrances from eyewitnesses or families of eyewitnesses, that some of these weren't just elderly women and gentlemen telling a story?
Well, we've had some of those. But Gene, when you sit down and before anything's out, before we had hit the lecture trail, if you want to call it that, we spoke at a couple of UFO gigs, but before we divulged to anyone what we knew, only Suzanne and I knew that, and a couple of people. Frank Warren was privy to some. Mike Price was privy to some. When you're talking to elderly men, whether they be in Phoenix or in Las Vegas, and they're telling the same story, and these guys, you know, it wasn't like two old-timers sitting on the park bench in downtown Aztec that could have coerced this story all these years. These guys are separated by miles. And in the case of Ken Farley, he never knew anybody in that area. He was the transient guy driving through that day. So when I'm interviewing him, and by the way, he only wanted to talk when it was very obvious that he was near death. He was in the stage four of emphysema and did die 8 months after we interviewed him. And he said, look, you know, I don't know who the other guys at the crash site were. All I know is I was with my buddy. We were on the western edge. We stayed away from everybody. They were doing stupid things, climbing on the craft. We were just in awe of what we were looking at. Our little adventure turned into a bigger adventure that day.
But do you think the final evidence or proof will ever come out about Aztec or Roswell or any other possible early case involving UFOs or crashes?
I don't think it will. Not in our lifetime. I'm 54 years of age. Started on this when I was in my 20s. I just don't see it happening. I don't see the government, especially in these trying times, to come forward and admit that, well, for 63 years or 64 years for Roswell, we've been telling the public a lie, regardless of whether it was for our own safety. And if we got the military technology, any kind of technology out of these craft, I wouldn't have told the public either, quite frankly.
Possibility of a whistleblower. What about the President of the United States? This is one of the ongoing pieces of speculation. I'll just throw it out there. And that is, when the new president takes office, and we have another guy who thinks he or hopes he's going to take over in November. Say Romney becomes president, takes over in January of 2013. Is someone going to go to him and say, Mr. President, we've got to tell you something, but it can never leave the Oval Office? Or will they just ignore that because he's just another temporary guy and he'll be replaced?
he's another temporary guy, and he'll be replaced. Obama is going to have the most transparent presidency ever. And actually, Eric Holder has made it more difficult to get documents out of the archives than any other president since I've been working
on. So I've heard from Larry Bryant and other people who try to get government documents. Let me ask you, Scott Ramsey, please tell our listeners where they can get a copy of the book.
www.theaztecincident.com. And you can go on there with PayPal. Now that we have books, and I apologize to those that waited 2 weeks because I was late, we will ship your book out the day we get the order. It will go media rate unless you tell us differently, but it's theaztecincident.com.
You're going to have an electronic version eventually?
Yes, we already have it done. I just want to sell some more books before we put it out.
And that you'll put into iBooks or maybe to Amazon Kindle or something like that. A special reminder, you can find us at theparacast.com. Once again, theparacast.com. Our forums at forum.theparacast.com. Where else would they be? That's where you have cutting-edge discussions on all aspects of the paranormal and lots of other things. And you can find us on Twitter. Send us a tweet to theparacast. We are theparacast on Twitter. And don't forget that Chris O'Brien's site, OurStrangePlanet.com, is being thoroughly redesigned. Our special thanks to Scott and Suzanne Ramsey for joining us this week on The Paracast.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNLive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNLive.com. Again, that's GCNLive.com.
The people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.